Her er Peter von Kohl, der byder velkommen til en udsendelse om det tyrk-kypriotiske mindretal. Jeg formulerer det bevidst på den måde, fordi egentlig er der tale om to stater på øen Kypern. Denne Middelhavsø, der blev oprettet som en selvstændig stat i 1960, men som siden har været præget af uro imellem de to befolkningsgrupper. Godt og vel to tredjedele er græskyprioter, og den sidste tredjedel er altså tyrkkyprioter. Der er en lang historie om både osmansk besættelse af øen og senest britisk besættelse op til 1960, men det korte og lange er, at de to befolkningsgrupper ikke har kunnet finde ud af at leve sammen. Derfor forsøgte den græskypriotiske ledelse i 1973 at for nu er jeg sige det direkte, smide tyrkkyprioterne i havet, for så var det problem jo løst. Det førte til, at FN i april 1974 sendte en fredsbevarende styrke, som faktisk lige siden da har markeret adskillelseslinjen, såkaldte grønne linje på Kypern, der endda deler nu verdens eneste delte hovedstad, nemlig Nicosia. I nord hedder den Lefkosia, og i syd altså Nicosia. I dag har der været gjort temmelig mange forsøg på at nå frem til en løsning. De to ledere af de to befolkningsgrupper har mødtes talrige gange ved den grønne linje, og de har også senest været i Schweiz for at prøve at under både FN-generalsekretærens og den britiske udenrigsminister og EU's udenrigsleder at finde en løsning. Men det gik ikke, blandt andet fordi det fra græskypriotisk side blev krævet, at alle tyrkiske tropper, og der er vel tale om en 35-40.000 mand i nord, der har stået der siden tyrkerne gik i gang med at dele øen op i 1974. Og så er spørgsmålet om Inosis. Deling i nord hedder Taksim, og den sammenslutning med Grækenland hedder Inosis. Endda i skolerne bliver der fejret, når det er årsdagen for kravet om Inosis. Så det er en højst antændt, men tilsyneladende fredelig måde, de lever på. Antændt derved, at der stadig er sådan små, det man kalder incidents, altså små, jeg vil ikke kalde dem happenings, men der sker af og til nogle overfald, primært for unge græskyprioter på tyrkkyprioter, og så er der i syd en voksende, også parlamentarisk modstand imod overhovedet at ville acceptere befolkningen i nord. I 1983 tog tyrkkyprioterne konsekvensen og dannede deres egen stat, den tyrkiske republik Nordkypern. Og denne republik er afhængig af Tyrkiet på alle tænkelige områder, fordi det internationale samfund besluttede at straffe, og så kommer min påstand, den eneste uskyldige part i alt dette her, nemlig tyrkkyprioterne, igennem en international handelsboykot. Men lad os se på, hvordan kypriotiske ledere selv opfatter det her. Jeg lægger ud med Mr. Nami, nok den mest talenterede politiker, der findes på øen. Han har både været udenrigsminister, og han har været chefforhandler med græskyprioterne, og han har også været i Europarådets parlamentariske forsamling, hvor tyrkkyprioterne har to såkaldte observatører. Så det er en erfaren mand, vi lægger ud med, og derefter er det den tidligere leder af handelskammeret, herr Toros, som fortæller noget om, hvordan i alverden de overhovedet overlever i nord. Og så er det en vicerektor for det amerikanske universitet, og hele universitetsopbygningen, altså med 13 universiteter i nord, er en væsentlig indtægtsfaktor for den nordlige republik. Og til sidst en analyse for måske den mest erfarne politiker på øen, Haki Atun. Han har både været ministerpræsident og formand for parlamentet i nord. Jeg taler i programmet bevidst om en selvstændig republik. Jeg provokerer dermed, det ved jeg godt, især den græske side af sagen. Men der skal findes en løsning for disse tyrkkyprioter, der virkelig, virkelig lades i stikken af det internationale samfund. Her er Nami først. What is your impression after everything broke down at the latest meetings in Switzerland?
Well, it was a huge disappointment because the Cyprus conference was convened after about 2 years of very difficult negotiations. at the invitation of Secretary General of the United Nations, who went on record saying that unprecedented progress has been achieved. So we went there with the full determination to put an end to the Cyprus issue and unite Cyprus. The guarantor powers, Turkey, Greece and UK, were with us, and European Union participated as an observer. Everybody saw how hard we, as the Turkish Cypriot side, tried to bring about a solution. But unfortunately, the Greek Cypriot leader refused to take the necessary steps, and the conference ended in a failure.
But am I correct by saying that the Greek Cypriot attitude was mainly based on the presence of the regular Turkish troops in your republic?
That was one point that they raised, but it was not a justified point, because we, as a Turkish Cypriot side, accepted upon the request of the Secretary General to dramatically reduce the number of Turkish troops on the island. Maybe it would be good to remind all your listeners that the Turkey and Greece keep troops on Cyprus based on international agreements that created the Republic of Cyprus in 1960. So we said we need to respect that arrangement, and a minimum number of troops, as was foreseen in the 1960 treaties, should remain.
May I interrupt you here? Because if I am remembering the 60 agreement after the conferences in Zurich and London, it was said no military, no regular military troops on the island, no presence of NATO on the island, and so on. Am I absolutely wrong?
In 1960, three treaties were signed. One of them was called Treaty of Alliance between Cyprus, Turkey and Greece, that gave Turkey and Greece the right to maintain troops on the island, Turkey 650 and Greece 950.
That is correct. Sorry. My initial feeling was that it was exactly the establishment in the south of the so-called EOKA-A, later EOKA-B organizations, which were those who were actually fighting you.
Yes. Later on, the Greek Cypriot paramilitary groups, who first armed themselves push back the British from the island, and then turned their eyes on the Turkish Cypriots and waged a war against us to unite Cyprus with Greece.
Because you were taking the side of the British at that time, correct?
That was their excuse, but their, because we were the ultimate barrier in front of their aspiration to unite Cyprus with Greece. This is known as the Enosis concept. Of course, Turkish Cypriots would never accept union of Cyprus with Greece.
And that was the reason why you had to interfere in the coup d'etat on the south in 1974, correct?
That is absolutely correct, yes.
Well, let's have a look on the present situation. You are having these regular troops in the north. You are very much also, by economic ways, depending on the will of Ankara. Correct?
Ankara supplies one quarter of our budget. That's right.
And the rest?
We generate from our own economic activities. We have a strong education sector. We have around 100,000
which are the universities,
students.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. University students from around the world. We also have a tourism sector. And we also have some level of agricultural exports.
But the tourism is mainly, as far as I have learned, based on your casinos, correct?
That's correct. Casinos are a big part of our tourism sector for the time being.
When you're talking about the agriculture sector, now you have got water from Turkey, which should improve your agriculture possibilities, correct?
That's right. Of course, we need to develop our irrigation system, but plans are underway. And in the coming years, I think that sector is going to grow in exponential form.
And you have offered the South to get part of this water coming via a pipeline from Turkey. They have refused it, correct?
That's right. That's right. And that was a big surprise to us because they're in great need of water.
Exactly.
But our offer still stands. And now there's another project underway to bring electricity through cables underwater from Turkey, which is going to dramatically reduce the electricity cost for us. And we are also offering that to them if they so wish. This can be arranged. And there are, of course, bigger projects to also transfer the water from Cyprus to Palestine, for example, or places like that if there is a demand for it. We are ready to cooperate not only with Greek Cypriots but with all our neighbors.
But now you're approaching one of the perhaps greatest challenges, if not problems, turning up in front of you, which is the exploration of the underground around your island entirely, and thereby violating, so you say and so Anchor says, the interests of your economy, so to speak.
Well, there has been recent discoveries of some potential hydrocarbon reserves.
Exactly.
That belong to Cyprus. Of course, Cyprus belongs to all Cypriots, Turkish and Greek. Therefore, exploration of these should benefit both communities. Unfortunately, the Greek Cypriot side is engaged in unilateral actions with some multinational companies. As a response, we signed agreements with Turkish companies, and we are going to take equivalent action in similar timing. Therefore, we have to protect our own interests. But we offered to the Greek Cypriot side to establish a joint group in an ad hoc fashion to engage in this exploration in a cooperative format, rather than going against each other. Unfortunately, until now, they rejected this offer, saying that they are the only recognized country and they can do whatever they want. Such attitude leads to further tension, and I hope they revisit the situation.
You are under a very heavy embargo, international embargo. How do you feel, you yourself, deep inside you, being punished this way? Or may I put it in another way, what did you wrong so you had to be punished?
That's a very good question. Let me answer you back with the words of the previous Secretary General of United Nations, Kofi Annan. In 2004, when we said yes to a United Nations peace plan, the so-called Annan plan, and the Greek Cypriot side said no, he said in his report that there are no longer any justification whatsoever to impose isolation and embargoes on Turkish Cypriots. By our yes vote to peace plan, we have undone any justification whatsoever. Therefore, he had called on all members of United Nations, in particular members of Security Council, to establish bilateral and multilateral relations with Turkish Cypriots. Unfortunately, nobody listened to the Secretary General, and we are still under heavy isolations and embargoes, and that's a huge injustice, considering the fact that we had said yes to unification of Cyprus, and the Cyprus is still divided because of the Greek Cypriot no vote.
Do you think there is any hope of further improvement in the contacts between the two communities?
Well, we have an open border, and we have political parties and non-governmental organizations who are actively trying to promote rapprochement between the two communities. Unfortunately, all foreign observers also would attest to this. There is a great interest in promoting such relations from the Turkish Cypriot community, but not that much from the Greek Cypriot community. This is mainly because of the fact that they are enjoying the benefits of being treated as an EU member state, recognized country, international relations, what have you. And we do not. So as long as this anomaly remains, I am afraid the efforts for increased cooperation and rapprochement between the two communities will be very weak.
How do you feel to have to be protected by a UN peacekeeping force now for 53 years?
I wouldn't say we are protected by them. They are here observing the peace. Their main protection is coming from our own troops, as well as troops from Turkey. For the time being, UNFICIP, United Nations Peacekeeping Operation in Cyprus, is going and review process. Due to budgetary pressures, they are revisiting their existence on the island. We are saying that we shouldn't ask the United Nations to spend more money, time and energy in Cyprus. We can easily take care of our own affairs by establishing dialogue and cooperation between the authorities of the two sides, in particular police authorities. If the Greek Cypriot side is ready to cooperate on that, I think United Nations can use its resources in other parts of the world which need it more.
One of the key problems, core problems, is the so-called Enosis demands, which are raised again even by school children in the south. Do you think these movements towards we want Enosis, which is unification, as you rightly said before, with Greece, will raise? And do you think this will be the core problem?
What happened a few months ago in South Cyprus was they decided to commemorate the decision for Enosis. Of course, the glorification of the very event that led to the conflict in Cyprus between the two communities was totally acceptable. Unfortunately,
unacceptable.
Unacceptable. Therefore, we reacted strongly against it. Unfortunately, within the Greek Cypriot society, such sensitivities are still not shown, and that's a big problem. And it's a big problem coming from the education system. If we don't teach our children the correct way of history and what happened in Cyprus, of course, then our ability to solve our problems become more difficult.
May I end this interview by a very, very simple question? Are you an optimist?
I am always an optimist.
As far as I know Churchill, you, yes.
Like Churchill once said, there is no reason for not being an optimist. We have to keep the hope alive. Our hand of friendship is always extended. And I hope that this will be taken and we will be able to solve the Cyprus problem and not transfer it to future generations.
Og efter samtalen med Hanami, i dag rådgiver for den tyrkopriotiske præsident, så er det formanden for Handelskammeret, Fikris Tordos. You've been the president of the Chamber of Commerce of the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus. In that capacity, you must have experienced how it is at all possible to have any kind of commerce when you are a country which is embargoed by the international society.
The Turkish Cypriot community has been under isolation since 1963, following the intercommunal violences triggered by the Greek Cypriots. Sadly, in 2004, the European Union decided to accede a conflicted and a divided island, leaving the Turkish Cypriots outside the membership, almost pretending that Cyprus is solely owned by the Greek Cypriot community. This defied the constitution of the Republic of Cyprus, and it defied the underlying principles of the European Union that emphasize unity, solidarity, and freedoms. The Turkish Cypriots have been under serious violation of human rights and sanctions ever since. As you correctly say, these sanctions have reflected upon inability to gain access to European markets in regards to our exports. Unfortunately, the situation still remains unchanged, and whenever we have voiced this as a detriment to our economic development, we have always been told that all our focus should be levied upon the finding of a comprehensive political settlement. Well, we have done this. We have contributed constructively, in good faith, until recently, as we all know. Unfortunately, the Greek Cypriots still remain intransigent, and they happen to be enjoying this monopoly power over Cyprus too much.
But Mr. Toros, if I may interrupt you here, you are members of the European Union since the entire island was accepted as a new member in 2004 of the European Union. Have you ever felt a kind of acceptance of your existing at all?
The island has been a European territory as one island since 2004. That in the accession treaty of Cyprus, Northern Cyprus is clearly defined as areas of Cyprus outside the effective control of the Republic and the administration in the south. The Turkish Cypriots are European citizens. However, we are not within the European acquis communautaire, which is the European Union jurisdiction. And this has created an atmosphere whereby our rights, our economic development and social development and European Union directives have all been suspended. Therefore, we cannot possibly feel as part of the European Union, we cannot possibly feel that we are within the jurisdiction, and the continuation of the sanctions and lack of ability to harmonize Northern Cyprus to the European acquis has clearly, unfortunately, levied a very unfair treatment over our community.
Well, I wonder, you is the only country where you can do some kind of commerce activities, Turkey?
Turkey has been the only country who has been granting us political and economic security since 1963. We have had no other choice but depend on Turkey, grow our ties with Turkey, and the only means of reaching out to the rest of the world has only been via Turkey. So Turkey has been and remains to be a very critical country for our existence, let alone our social and economic development.
And there's no chance that other Muslim countries, former Soviet republics or in the Near East, could close their ranks and support you?
Unfortunately, politically, no. The United Nations has refused to recognize the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, which was founded by our former president, late Rauf Denktaş. And as a result of this decision of the United Nations, unfortunately, no country is in a position to recognize us politically. However, social and economic ties are perfectly possible to establish. I can comfortably make the Taiwanese situation as an example of what I'm trying to say. Taiwan has been deprived of political recognition, but Taiwan at the same time has been one of the leading workshops of the world markets. Now, this is an island economy. I don't claim to be similar to Taiwan, where there is heavy industry, etc. But we do have agriculture, we do have services, and we do have light industries, which are in desperate need of exploring new overseas markets.
Couldn't you cooperate with Taiwan?
It's a little bit far, I'm afraid. there are markets, there are plenty of markets in our close vicinity, and we endeavor to reach out to them. We have managed to establish economic and commercial relations with quite a lot of Middle Eastern countries, the Gulf countries in particular, such as Kuwait, UAE, Qatar, Bahrain, etc. But these are by no means enough. Our current exports stand at just under $120 million, and it needs to be at least four or five times before we can talk about a fair economic development.
When Lebanon, due to the civil war, broke down as being the financial center of the Near East, a lot of activities were transferred to the Greek Cypriot part, and by that, nothing happened in the north?
I'm afraid not. The only foreign capital, so to speak, that we enjoy here is the Turkish capital.
That leads me, of course, to the question, could you at all exist without Turkey?
Under the prevailing political situation, absolutely not.
Does that mean that all kind of money activity of goods and whatever, including tourism, has to go either via Turkey or being undertaken by Turks?
70% of our imports are from Turkey, and about 60% of our exports are destined to Turkey. The remaining commercial activities with the rest of the world all reach to us or go out to them via Turkey. Turkey is the logistical gateway for freight as well as air traffic.
I have interviewed the Mr. Webby, the professor at the Gilne American University, about the income the your republic gets via the 13 universities. How about the tourism? Isn't that a part, even if those tourists mainly are coming to visit the casinos?
Yeah. As I said earlier, this is an island economy, and it carries the typical traits of an island economy. And what do I mean by that? What I mean is that the leading sector comprises of service sectors, the service industries. And when you look at all islands and see their contributions to the GDP, the TRNC is no different. When you look at our GDP, you can comfortably see that 73% of the contributing sectors are service sectors. And as a result of our very correct strategic moves, we have managed to develop a tourism industry as well as a higher education industry. And right now, we are enjoying about $700 million of revenue from both of these sectors. This island has become a credible higher education center in Eastern Mediterranean. Currently, we are educating 93,000 students, which is remarkable, considering that this is a part of the island with only about 350,000 population. We are hosting about 1.3 million tourists a year, 65% of which are from Turkey, and the remaining 35% from other countries. Obviously, just like in other holiday resorts, there has to be a pull factor. And the pull factor here is the casinos and convention centers. So in all our touristic resorts, casinos and convention sector investments are on an inclining move as we speak. And this has been so in the last 15 years.
Sitting in the European Parliament in Strasbourg and making this interview with you, I feel that the European Union is not taking care of citizens belonging to its territory by the total neglect of your republic. What are your own hopes for the future when it comes to the European Union or even to the Council of Europe and its 47 members?
Cyprus has 6 seats in the European Parliament, and they're all occupied by Greek Cypriots. If the European Union has acceded Cyprus based upon its 1960 constitution, then they should allocate 2 seats out of the 6 to Turkish Cypriots. If we are talking about human rights, equality, respect and esteem to constitutions, then the European Union is expected to honor these for the Turkish Cypriots. The fact that Cyprus remains divided in conflict is not because the Turkish Cypriots have committed a crime and deserve to be punished for it. Secondly, since 2004, despite the clear description of the Turkish Cypriot community and Northern Cyprus under Protocol 10 of the Accession Treaty, and despite the entry into force of 2 regulations, namely Green Line Regulation and Financial Aid Regulation, for the development of the Turkish Cypriot community, the European Union has only been treating Turkish Cypriots for as much as the Greek Cypriot administration has allowed. This, of course, has taken us to where we are, whereby the relations are extremely restricted and they're left up to the discretion of the bigger conflicted party.
When you, the Turk Cypriots, accepted the so-called Annan Plan in 2004 and the Greek Cypriots didn't, the at that time responsible commissioner Verheugen from Germany was extremely generous in saying you would have a huge amount of money to reconstruct your part of the island as a way of saying thank you from the side of the EU. Have you seen any kind of euro coming?
In the last 13 and a half years since Cyprus has been a full-fledged member, the Turkish Cypriot community has received approximately 460 million euros.
But under certain conditions?
Of course, under certain conditions, which is perfectly understandable. However, this has not been enough. This has been very far behind what was committed in order to realize the promised social and economic development. As we approach to the end of the year 2017, Northern Cyprus still remains very far from being in compliance insofar as our health and safety standards are concerned. And the Greek Cypriots have been very, very instrumental in influencing the European Union to keep their promises and their financial contributions almost at a symbolic level. This is totally contrary to what was promised. Not only this, but back in 2004, after the vast majority ratification vote in the Turkish Cypriot community, we were promised direct trade regulation as well, together with Green Line and financial aid.
Nothing happened.
The direct trade regulation was going to facilitate trade with the European Union markets, without which one cannot possibly talk about any economic development. One cannot talk about lasting investments and productivity and proper allocation of resources, etc., etc. So, and again, that was the influence of the Greek Cypriots, and of course their monopoly of the six seats in the parliament didn't help matters either. So we expect and we call upon the European Union institutions to review the situation, particularly after what they witnessed at the second Cyprus conference held in Crans Montana at the end of
Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
May I finalize this interview by asking you a very simple question? Are you an optimist?
I am hopeful, but not sufficiently optimistic.
Efter den tidligere formand for det tyrkypriotiske handelskammer, hr. Toros, så er det Havavit, som er blandt andet dekan på det amerikanske universitet, Girne Universitetet i den tyrkypriotiske republik.
You are associate professor at the so-called Girne American University. Let me first say Girne is what was former called Kyrenia, the city in the north. But please tell me, what is the American University?
Well, first of all, I don't accept the so-called part.
No.
Girne American University.
Uh-huh.
Girne is the Turkish name of the city.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't called Kyrenia before. All cities in Cyprus since the British time have had three names,
and yes,
that was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
One English name, one Turkish name, and one Greek name.
Yes.
So Girne has been Girne for a long time.
Yes.
It's not changed, and it's not so-called. The American part comes from when the university was first established in 1985. At the time, there were no rules, bylaws, regulations about higher institutions in North Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
So the founding rector of the university, Mr. Serhat Akpınar, had signed an agreement with the Southeastern University in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
to be the Cyprus campus, in the campus of Southeastern University. So the system started as the American credit system, and everything has continued that way until 1990, which the Turkish Higher Education Council has recognized the university as a degree-granting independent institute.
How many students are there?
At the moment, there are 15,000 students coming from more than 120 countries.
But, Mr. Wiebe, it's no secret that Cyprus, the northern part of Cyprus, your republic, is under an international embargo. How can students come?
Definitely it is under international embargo. But thank God, most of the independent accrediting institutes worldwide do not go into political issues, and they go into whether the university degree programs are qualified to be accredited or not.
What is the difference from your university and the other universities? Because there are more than 10, I think.
At the moment, 13.
13 even. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between yours and
them? We are the oldest.
Uh-huh.
University, Girne American University, is the oldest. And from the beginning, we have been applying the American higher education system, which is a very advantageous and quite flexible system. The medium of instruction is English still in most programs, and it's our academic staff and academic staff and students do come from a lot of different countries. So we have a truly multilingual campus. In certain other universities, the medium of speaking, the medium of instruction, English is not that much up to the level.
Okay.
So that's an advantage for an American university. Our friendly environment, our academic staff and students' interactions and communications are all very warm and are well known.
And what the students are learning and what they are getting, what kind of degrees they are getting, is accepted worldwide?
Well, yes, the American university degree is accepted worldwide, anywhere in the world, because we are accredited and listed in the Higher Education Council of Turkish board, and we receive the Turkish students from the Turkish Central Examination System. That gives us one international accreditation, and also we are recognized by UK NARIC. And UK NARIC is a European recognition system of universities outside the UK. And but we are recognized. Also, the international, the United Nations International Association of Universities.
But are you, in a way, depending on the support from Turkey?
In a way, yes, because 70% of the students come from Turkey. That's one way. And being in the Higher Education Council of Turkish list brings us an advantage. So you are right. In a way, we are depending on Turkey because that's our reality. The international world, unfortunately, has been pressuring us with an inhuman embargo. And in this way, the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, the citizens of Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, and the institutes of the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus do depend on Turkish support.
But can one say that the economy of the Republic of Northern Cyprus is depending on these on the incomes of via these 13 universities?
Well, definitely higher education is by far the most important economic factor, not only with the direct direct impact, but also indirect impact. Like the students do come here, other than paying the tuition fees and accommodation fees to universities or householders, other than that, they spend for social issues, they spend for food, they spend for transportation, entertainment, sports, everything. And in a small economy like North Cyprus, the official population is 300,000, and there are 100,000 students coming from out of the island, one-third of the population. This is a very important impact to the Turkish Cypriot economy, North Cyprus
There's another part of your work which is connected to sport activities.
Yes, I am also the chairman, the president of Çetinkaya Football Club, which is the first and oldest football club Turkish football club in Cyprus. It was established in 1930, and Çetinkaya is one of the founders of the Cyprus Football Federation.
Which is the entire island.
Which at the moment represents Greek Cypriot society, Greek Cypriot teams. They have unfortunately kicked out Çetinkaya and some other Turkish clubs in 1955 from the Cyprus Football Federation. So in a way, we were kicked out from a federation that we have established. Since then, our team, our young football players are not as lucky as the students. We are under a very serious football and sports embargo, very inhuman again.
Yeah, but it's a very much interesting part of violation of human rights for your citizens, that you are not, even being a part of the European Union, allowed to play, to participate at matches or anything, sport activities, because you, so to speak, are having a wrong, I almost said color, being Turk Cypriots, not being just Cypriots, correct?
Exactly. It's fully against human rights. We are not allowed to play even to Turkish teams from Turkey. We are not allowed to play against any team. So they are saying the very modern, very civilized, very humanitarian so-called EU is also included, as well as with the UN resolution, UN Council decision, that Turkish Cypriots are under this embargo, which is definitely against the human rights. So I believe the human rights issue is only political.
But tell me, you are allowed to get a EU passport. Couldn't you, having such a passport in your hand, even if you have to get that via the Greek Cypriot authorities, couldn't you participate in EU, normal European sport activities, if you had such a passport in your hand?
Maybe as an individual I could, but as a team we are not.
Even if the whole team had that kind of passport?
Most probably, yes, because at the moment we are a Turkish Cypriot team, and we are not allowed to participate anywhere else. They are not even playing friendly games with us.
And does that mean that you actually, if you want to participate on an international level, have to use a Turkish passport to be able to participate via a Turkish club?
Well, individually, with the Turkish passport or with the Greek Cypriot Cyprus EU passport, individually, Turkish Cypriots can use that advantage and participate in international clubs. But it's important that we participate as an institute. It's important that we participate as a club, as a team.
And you
in
cannot,
that case, yeah? We cannot. We are under the embargo.
But you cannot, even as an international operating university, participate? Even, for instance, if there are matches arranged between universities?
Well, we have attended 2 years ago to the World Universities World Table Tennis.
Uh-huh.
Tournament, but the way we have attended was because we were the champions of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. We have actually represented Turkey in that tournament, not Cyprus. That's the problem.
What is, in your opinion, and that might be my final question, the reason for having this embargo on a population which did nothing wrong, connected to the Turkish intervention and then invasion in northern part of Cyprus in 1974?
Well, as Turkish Cypriots, since 1960, we haven't done anything against like the so-called Republic of Cyprus, which was established in 1960. It was the Greek Cypriots that have screwed that up, actually. They wanted to change the constitution. They wanted to change all the articles, all the points in the constitution that protected the Turkish Cypriot rights. So all the problems started from there, actually. So the problem should not be related to 1974, but the problem should be related to 1963. Which the Greek Cypriots decided to change the constitution.
And try to remove the Turk Cypriot population from the island.
And exactly. So this is the big mistake the rest of the world and the United Nations Council is making. this problem has started in 1963 because of the Greek Cypriots. And then the consequences happened in 66 and then 74 and still continuing. But we should look at the roots of the problem to start with. But the Turkish Cypriots were probably the only fault Turkish Cypriots had was to try to protect their lives. And since then, we have been punished for this with violations of the human rights, being under economic embargoes, social embargoes, political embargoes, and sports embargoes.
Professor Webby, are you an optimist?
I am not that much of an optimist because, to be honest with you, I have a lot of Greek Cypriot friends. I have a lot of Greek Cypriot communications. And as a minority, we have good relations with certain individuals. But when I look at the Greek Cypriot community, the way they bring up their child, the way they grow up their children, especially with the education system, and especially under the Orthodox Church influence, they grow up their kids, their children, to hate the Turkish system.
And to look for enosis, the unification
exactly.
Between the island and Greece.
So with this light, I'm not optimistic at all. From the Turkish Cypriot point of view, we have proved, I believe, our sincerity at the Annan Plan. We have voted in favor of the Annan Plan in
65%
vote, and the Greek Cypriots have voted 75% no.
Because they were already member of the UN.
The UN and EU have been biased against the Turkish Cypriots and still continued with the embargoes. So with this unbalanced issue, with the very, very wrong decision of the EU to accept Greek Cypriots into the EU, a very biased decision, and with the already existing United Nations decisions, I don't see, if you don't balance something, if there's a difference, if you are in favor of one person, and they, the first two persons have a conflict, and all the big powers are in favor of one, there's no way to have an agreement. Things to be balanced economically, things to be balanced politically, things to be balanced from the recognition point of view. So then to almost equal, at least parties could come with an agreement. At the moment, the Greek Cypriots are spoiled. They are recognized. They exercise all the rights of any European Union or any internationally accepted, recognized country. And when you look at the Turkish Cypriots, they are under big embargoes, big pressure. So how can you expect these two parties to come up with a sustainable and fair agreement?
I can hear you're not a total optimist. Let me put it that way.
I am not.
Og så samtalen med Hagi Atun. 82 år, har oplevet det hele siden 1960, der er sket på øen Cypern. Han er dermed nok den mest erfarne analytiker, tidligere ministerpræsident, tidligere formand for det tyrkypriotiske parlament. What are your feelings right now when everything failed in the negotiation between the two communities at the last meeting in Switzerland? What do you feel?
Our general opinion at this moment, after spending half a century, 50 years, to come to an agreement, to come to a reconciliation with the Greek Cypriot side. We think we have come to the end of the road as far as a federal system is concerned. It seems that we cannot satisfy the Greek Cypriot side whatever concession we make. The last attempt from their side is the guarantee system and the removal of the Turkish troops from North Cyprus. Another alternative system should be discussed from now on. We are still under their embargoes for 50 years. the state in the north is still the occupied area. They are the member of the European Union, and the north is also a part of the European Union as far as the Union of Cyprus as a whole to the EU is concerned. So we say you should remove the embargoes, you should accept our equality and our statehood, and then we can sit down and carry on with the negotiations to unite Cyprus.
May I ask you, Mr. Atun, in which way do you feel in your daily life this embargo?
In fact, the most effective element of the embargo is the international flights. In another part of our lives, Turkey has come to our assistance. We are in touch with the whole world. We are able to import and export our goods.
But only to Turkey?
No. We can export directly some of our dairy products, and we can export to Turkey, of course, much more easily. So international flights is the most effective part because we are a touristic country. Most of the architectural and historical heritage is in the north of the rich history of Cyprus. So we are asking the British government as a guarantor power now to reconsider this position. And the Chamber of Lords has discussed this matter recently, and we are pressing on the British government to reconsider this and remove this.
But Mr. Atun, when your country as such, Cyprus, became an independent country in 1960, it was tried with a kind of system whereby the power should be divided between Turk Cypriots and Greek Cypriots. That failed. What makes you believe that there is a chance to have a solution including the Greek Cypriots and the Turk Cypriots in a rightful way?
A two-state solution, as it is working now, is the most logical and should be the most justified solution. Because since 2003, freedom of movement between the north and the south has been going on with no problem, with no incident. If there were some incidents in the meantime, it came from the fascist elements of the south. Nothing happened in the north. They can cross to the north any time of the day, and they have come across no problem whatsoever. You can't see any Turkish soldier around. So this system that has been working should be the base of a common united Cyprus. And that is why we say you should accept our equality, our statehood, and then we can unite Cyprus on a two-state structure.
There are two European bodies who are in a position where they could do something. The European Union, as you mentioned, and the Council of Europe. At the Council of Europe, you have two regular observers since some years, but they are not.
That's true.
They are not allowed to vote. They are allowed to speak and to participate in committee meetings, but not to vote. How do you feel about that?
We feel that European Union has not been just to our problem.
Yeah, not. May I interrupt you and let's try to stick first to the Council of Europe, where you have these two observers, but no right for these observers to vote. How do you feel about that?
That only prevents the Greek Cypriot side to come to an agreement with us. If such a movement, if such a step is taken, I think the knot, as we say, the Gordian knot, will be opened. Everything is working in their favor. Unfortunately, United Nations and the Council of Europe has done a great mistake by accepting them into the European Union without a solution, without finding a solution to this.
But that was in the European Union, but at the Council of Europe, which is the institution in Europe which should maintain the uphold of human rights. Are you feeling that your human rights are neglected?
Of course we do. As you know, when we met earlier in Strasbourg, we have been fighting for the last, since actually 1983 onwards, when Turkey, after the coup in Turkey, came again, was accepted into the European Union, with their participation, we fought for this right that you are talking about, but nothing came out. There is some progress, as you say. We can sit in the chamber, but we can't vote. There is a little progress, but not entirely. So you are absolutely right in saying that a body like Council of Europe should reconsider our international rights, our human rights. But every time we fought for that, to accept that right, to make them accept that right, forwarded the problem, the Cyprus problem, to the political committee instead of legal committee. So every time they find a way to bypass our problem. And I think one of the great responsibilities should lie to the Council of Europe as well. If they don't make any step, we won't be able to make any progress.
May I then turn to the European Union? At the Parliament, where I am sitting at the moment, your position, your people, is totally neglected. Have you ever got an answer why?
You see, every time we have shown a positive sign towards the Secretary General Special Representative here, but somehow even the latest Secretary General, Mr. Guterres, having seen our approach together with Turkey in Transmontana in Switzerland, they are not somehow open to the problem. They don't want to blame in any way the Greek Cypriot side. They still recognize them as a full state, whereas one of the partners of that original state is missing. That is, as you say, an unacceptable human right, international right.
Yeah, but you should be entitled to at least two seats among the Cypriot delegation to the European Parliament, to the EU, and you are not allowed to enter this area. There are no documents in Turkish. There are no interpreters who are translating into Turkish. Even the European Union is violating your human rights. Don't you feel so?
I think so. I still do so. The Annan Plan, you see, after the Annan Plan, we could just come out and say no more than this, because it said that if one side refuses it, it is null and void. But since then, we still carried on with negotiations, but nothing came out. They still ask for more and more. So the European Union, as I said, should rethink injustice done to the Turkish Cypriot side and solve the problem. If we are in the European Union as a whole, Cyprus, there is no reason why they shouldn't do what they are suggesting.
Exactly. And may I tell the listeners that you are 82, and by that you have followed the whole development since 60, even before, of Cyprus.
And I have been through it all the time.
You have. And may I ask you finally, are you an optimist?
I am optimist in so far as we work for another alternative. Otherwise, I am not optimist with the negotiations that they say after the elections will start again. Their opposition, Anastasiadis' opposition,
the president
this
in the
very
south
morning, mm-hmm, yeah, Akel especially, is saying that you concentrate on your Cyprus problem and not on your personal problem to Anastasiadis, your personal position and your chair that you are sitting on. So they are suggesting that we should start negotiations again. But how long? 50 years is not enough. There is a say which is enough is enough. So I am pessimist in that respect. We shouldn't carry on with the negotiations with the same procedure. We should put on the table a new alternative and we should work on that. I think he has always sat on the table, Anastasiadis, with Akinji, with preconditions.
With your president.
And his, and his last, and his latest precondition is the removal of the guarantee system, which is our livelihood, which is our most important right, not only of the Turkish Cypriots, but of Turkey as well, for their strategic reasons, for the natural gas that there is around the island and so on. So in the Eastern Mediterranean, Turkish strategic rights is on the table since the Treaty of Lausanne, and there should be a balance between Greece and Turkey. May I remind you that President Erdogan is planning to make a visit to Athens. That is a very significant step, an opening from the Turkish side. Let's wait what happens there.
Det var så en udsendelse om det tyrkcypriotiske mindretal, og at de genvordigheder, dette mindretal udsættes for fra det internationale samfund. Efter min mening en skamplet på udenrigspolitik i samtlige involverede stater rundt om øen Cypern. Og her er det så Peter von Kohl, der siger tak, og også tak for støtten fra Europanævnet.